Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of March 1st. Joined for our annual Oscar podcast by Bill McGarvey from Busted Halo and Father Jim Martin, culture editor here at America. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you. How are you doing?
Welcome. We're good.
Is this round three, Tim?
I believe it's round three, yeah. So, and this year we have 10 nominees to go through, so we're going to be busy. But Jim, first we'll say welcome to you.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Now, I have not seen the first film, Avatar. Let's launch right into it. I'm probably the only person who has not seen this film. But both Father Jim and Bill have seen it. So did it live up to the hype, Father Jim?
Well, you know, I think the hype was pretty extraordinary. I went in thinking that this was the movie that was going to change movie history. So I don't quite think that's the case. But I was very impressed with it. I think the plot was kind of banal. But the CGI was amazing. The idea that they would transfer characters' faces into CGI was exciting. The 3D was great. I haven't seen a 3D movie since I think I was 12. And I didn't get a headache, which I was worried about. But I enjoyed it. I found the most exciting thing for me was this kind of entree into this new world. He created this entirely new world with new animals and new people. And I just found that very creative. And I also have to give it to James Cameron for spending 5 years on that movie. That, to me, that was very impressive and a real sort of example of great follow through. So I really enjoyed it. But it was not the greatest movie I'd ever seen.
Now, Bill, a lot has been made about sort of the pantheistic element of this film and kind of the worship of nature. And a couple of people have objected to it specifically from, you know, kind of a Christian perspective. Yeah. What was your take on that part of the film?
Well, as in a devout pantheist, I felt...
Be careful.
I kid. Let me just talk, if I can, first about the movie itself. Because, I mean, seeing the previews, I remember looking at the previews thinking, wow, this is going to be terrible. These are blue people, and I'm not buying this at all. And I have to admit, I saw it right before Christmas. I took my nephew, who's 20 years old. He's a big movie fan as well. I really was surprised how much I liked it, only because after a while, I really believed. To me, it becomes a question of when do you finally actually believe these people, these blue figures, are real. And to a certain degree, after a while, you really believe in their love, and you believe in who they are, and you care about them in ways that I didn't think I would. So in that sense, I thought it was an achievement. I agree that the hype was beyond belief. But I felt the same way about Titanic as well. James Cameron makes huge sort of spectacles. I'm not so sure he's a great... I don't consider him a great storyteller. I think the story was Dances with Wolves, really, to be honest with you. As far as the pantheism, I mean, I'm not so sure it's that far from a lot of what passes for the Green Movement and a lot of people who want to talk about nature. I didn't find that. I think you can overinterpret some of that stuff. So,
yeah, I was just bringing it up because this film has entered into the cultural milieu in a way that, you know, it's getting written about in the op-ed page of the New York Times, and there's pieces in Commentary Magazine. Jim, maybe you can mention our reviewer who had a different take on it in terms of sort of the transcendental element of the film.
Yeah, he compared it not so much to pantheism, which I'd like to say parenthetically, so it's pantheist. I mean, that doesn't mean that it's going to make everyone in the United States or the world pantheists.
Right.
But I mean, it's a certain, you know, there are plenty of movies that come at things from a strange viewpoint. Our reviewer actually thought it was more like the transcendentalists, like Thoreau and Emerson, and their appreciation of nature, which I found very interesting, that it was Michael Tuath, who teaches in the film and communication department at Fordham University, who used that, I thought, as a nice way of complimenting what the Vatican was saying. The Vatican obviously critiqued it for the pantheistic elements, but you know, he thought it was more of an appreciation of nature, which would be very sort of Emersonian, which I tend to agree with. I also think that, you know, people can sometimes make too much of what is basically just a movie, and I don't think that too many people are going to be swayed in their sort of religious beliefs. But in a sense, I think it raised a lot of important points about the environment. There was a crazy review in, I think it was Commentary, where the guy just like went off. And sometimes I want to say to these critics, it's a movie, for Pete's sake. You know,
but this has entered. I mean, it has made more money than any movie in history.
True.
And it is, you know, part of the cultural vocabulary in a way that, honestly, you know, no book is ever going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
so. Yeah, but these people should also realize when they see Bugs Bunny that rabbits don't talk. Mm-hmm. And if they did, they probably wouldn't be as big a wisecrackers as Bugs is. So let me just go on the record as I am a monotheist. And,
me too.
And no, but I you know what? The fascinating thing about Avatar really is, to me, this is about the business of movie making, because people, all I hear about it really are, it's now made $1 billion, and it's really, and Titanic was the same way. It's really almost movie of spectacle rather than movie as art form. I mean, I liked it. But in the same way that I thought Titanic was a good movie, but I really kind of don't understand.
I don't either.
The tremendous wash of, I mean, to me, this is not, Pulp Fiction was a far more seismic movie to me than this was by a long shot. You know, there's a lot of movies that could go down through the ages and sort of think, wow, this is a far more important movie. But right. Avatar seems he seems to be able to...
It's a purely, it seems to me, technical innovation.
Yeah.
It's not a narrative innovation.
Well, you know, and I think that has been driving a lot of the sort of crowds. But, you know, interestingly, my 11-year-old nephew went to see it and didn't think it was that great. And I asked his parents, and they said, well, you know, he sees this stuff all the time in video games.
Right.
It's not that big of a jump for a lot of young people.
I mentioned my nephew was 19 or 20. Did not like it at all,
yeah.
And I think there might be an element to that we might be getting into the spectacle more than he is.
We're going to transition here to The Blind Side, which I gather is a film Bill has seen.
Yes.
I have not seen. Follow Jim.
I am blindsided by any comments that Bill will...
I don't think you, the commentators here, should be bragging that they haven't seen the movies, and yet they're going to pontificate anyway on them.
I can talk about the coverage of Blind Side. It's kind of a meta review, but go ahead. What did you think?
Again, an enjoyable movie. I think it's an interesting story, and Blind Side is a decent kind of biopic movie, and Sandra Bullock is memorable and good in the same way that you know, Jeff Bridges is really good in Crazy Heart, another movie that was really good, but I'm not so sure is worthy of tremendous accolades. So I mean, it's a good movie, decent movie, a touching movie. But if you had told me this was a television movie too, I wouldn't have been surprised either.
Now, did you think, speaking of someone who's only read that critique, did you think she deserved an Academy Award nomination?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose so. I mean, I guess, yeah. I mean, I can't think off the top of my head who else was really standout, but it was a standout role this year for a woman, Julia Childs. I mean, Meryl Streep and Julia, as Julia Childs, and Julia and Julia was probably, to me, the one that stands out the most. So, yeah, it was very good, and I understand the media, again, the media begins to feed on itself, and it starts talking about, this is Sandra Bullock's year. She never got any respect for it. It's like, well, geez, Sandra Bullock was a pretty big star.
Yeah.
And granted, she wasn't Meryl Streep in people's books, but I mean, yeah, she had it's a good role, and it's well done. And
well, and they say the industry rewards people, you know, like Julia Roberts getting it for Aaron Brockovich, something like that.
Right.
So
now, in this film, does it deal at all with? I mean, this is the story of a woman who adopts, am I correct, an African American teenager?
Yes.
Who is a football player, and this is based on that Michael Lewis book, which is mostly about the business of football, but this is one element of the story.
Right.
What do they deal with the complexity of that kind of relationship, you know, a white family taking in a black child?
Yes. I mean, not as deeply. I mean, they're in Memphis, I believe, and, you know, clearly there are racial issues. This is, I believe, in the late 90s, or maybe later, even in the 2000s. I can't even remember, to be honest with you. But it is not an overwhelmingly charged with tons of race. There's definitely an element to it. You know, but there's an economic component. He comes from a very, very impoverished background. So, again, it's a good movie. It's really about this sort of strong-willed Christian woman who is really like this matriarch who's a lioness with her cubs. And nobody, you know, in the same way that a blindside tackle, a left-side tackle in the NFL, his job is to make sure nobody gets at the quarterback because the quarterback can't see.
Right.
So it's a powerful metaphor.
In terms of the Christian element, do they play that down, play it? I mean, but you say it sort of sustains her.
Oh, she's very Christian, and I think in a way that, I don't know if she's non-denominational Christian or what exactly she is, but they make a joke in the movie about they start working with somebody who have to confess that they're a Democrat, and they thought that, you know, I think she makes some comment that I can't believe we've been working with a Democrat someday, you know what I mean? So there is sort of an element, these are kind of Christian Republican, well-off Southerners in Memphis who have done, you know, so, but yes, her faith, she wears a cross all the time, and yeah, I think their faith is very important to them, absolutely.
Well, we're going to transition to the next film, which is District 9, and I'm proud to say I have seen this film. I thought it was a good science fiction fable, and it didn't... this is, as for those of you who haven't seen it, it's about a... takes place in Johannesburg, South Africa, and it's about a basically a spaceship of aliens that basically docks over the city and for unknown reasons kind of settles there. And we pick up the story 20 years later when they're living in essentially these shanty towns. Given the politically charged nature of, you know, settlements in Johannesburg, I thought they didn't lean too heavily on that element and wasn't too heavy-handed. But I'll let you guys weigh in.
No, please don't. You strung together two of the movies I haven't seen, so I'll ask you questions. Did you think it worked as a morality tale about aliens and, or that is refugees and displaced persons? And
to a certain degree, yeah. I thought it was a good movie. Again, it was sort of, it reminded me of Blair Witch a number of years ago. They got a ton of press because of it being sort of an underdog movie,
right,
that really had, and District 9 was made on a shoestring budget.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I liked District 9. I thought it was a good movie. I thought it was worth seeing. I think it brings to mind, honestly, the other South African movie that isn't nominated here, which is Invictus.
Invictus, yeah.
Which I really thought, given the slate of films that are nominated here, I feel it was a bit of an oversight. But District 9, again, a good movie in a 10-slot Best Pictures category, I guess it makes sense, but it feels a little broad, and I'm not so sure it's something that I would...
Well, obviously, I think the Academy was trying to include blockbusters, right. Not just all of these serious kind of art house films. And this is, I'd say, kind of example number one of that, in that it's, trying to appeal to essentially... it came out over the summer. It's not a fall film.
They also want to attract people to the Academy Award telecast.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true.
What did you think? Did you think it was best picture material?
I think so. I mean, I would have included... I mean, in a list of 10, not a list of 5, but a list of 10, I would say so. And I thought the lead performance by... I don't know the South African actor's name, but he was very charming in that role. I thought it was a well-told story, and the way that they use... It's kind of that, which has been used a couple times now, but it's told in this kind of documentary format. Mm-hmm. They're going back trying to figure out what exactly happened with this individual that I just mentioned, who works for this basically private company that's been in charge of resettling the prawns, as they're called.
Which is a derogatory term.
Yes, exactly.
Right? Yeah. So please don't use derogatory terms on a podcast.
As I said, I also... I kind of rolled my eyes a bit before I saw it. I said, well, settlements, Johannesburg, it seemed like it's going to be kind of heavy-handed. But it was apolitical, and it was just trying to, as our reviewer said, Father Bob Barron said, it makes some very good points about what it means to be the other and how do you welcome the other into your community. Now, this obviously is an extraterrestrial other, but it raises questions about how we deal with immigrants and people who are outside of our community.
I would like to recommend, by the way, that review to people. That was very well done and took a different angle. I mean, also, Tim Reedy, our online editor, has sort of put all of our online culture reviews together in a package, so you can see that we actually have a pretty good track record for picking which are going to be the best pictures.
Yeah,
we'll
post that, and I'll give you the web address later.
Let me just go on record as saying I think this is Father Jim's way of sort of masking the fact that he hasn't seen these movies. I didn't see the film, but I loved the review.
Keep going. I've seen many of the other ones.
Now we're getting into the sweet spot here.
There we go.
Education, which I believe we've all seen.
Yes.
Good. Jim, what was your take on it?
I thought it was a good movie. I thought the performances were amazing. The Carrie Mulligan, the young girl who played the young girl. I thought, unfortunately, Alfred Molina was overlooked. I thought he should have gotten a supporting actor. He was terrific. It's an unusual story of a girl's coming of age and basically her, I would say, seduction by a much older man who comes from a very sort of dicey background. One of the things I found interesting about this movie, and Carrie Weber, one of our assistant editors, reviewed it, I really had a hard time with, particularly post sex abuse in the church. This movie that sort of took a girl who was in high school being seduced by a, say, 30, 35-year-old man and kind of presenting it. There were some sort of critical moments in the movie, but really like a romance. And I thought, now that would be interesting. What if it were, say, a boy, who was 15? It was like I had the same problem with The Reader with Kate Winslet last year. I just thought it was strange that, in not to excuse sexual abuse, obviously, but in some cases, it's an explosive issue, but when it's presented, shall we say, artfully in the movies, it can be sort of seen as romantic, which I had a hard time with. Now, I think that's brought out. You have people kind of criticizing that in the movie, but not as much as I would have thought. That you basically have this guy seducing an underage girl, and that didn't seem to sort of figure in too many of the reviews either. So I found it a little disturbing in its portrayal of that controverted relationship as romantic.
But didn't you think, Jim, that on a certain level, I agree with that, and yet I felt that I had to keep going back to go to a different context. And I thought I said the same thing to folks I talked to afterwards. And pointing out that back in 1962 or whatever this is set, that the father and the mother are very concerned that her daughter have a future and that this is a well-off man, sort of forgave tons of sins in her parents' eyes, which seemed odd to me looking back from 2010. But apparently in 1961, that was not considered sort of out of bounds.
I guess, but then, when she's looking back and she's reading her diary at the end, it's sort of, I learned so much from that summer and, I came of age. And so I don't know. What did you think, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, I like the element of, she's in this is post-war Britain, kind of depressed economy. There just wasn't a lot in her life that she found interesting or bright. It's raining all the time. So she was looking for an outlet. She was looking for, she was interested in French culture and music and movies. And here was this, kind of charming guy who brought her to Paris. And that was interesting to me, seeing the juxtaposition between, English life and French life in the 60s. But I agree. I found it slightly disturbing, especially that the parents kind of went along with it. You know, they just he seduced them as well as her.
Absolutely. Yeah, which was very well done. Yeah, his money and his charm and his sort of debonair attitude. I also thought that, you know, Alfred Molina was great. I just think he's one of my favorite actors. But he was surprisingly kind of go along to get along. I mean, I know that she, you know, they had a difficult time in you know, as you say, in post-war England. But it did seem strange that they put up almost no resistance. Yeah. It was sort of like it was almost like they were almost like her peers. You know?
And considering she was the only child, they had put a lot into her education. I mean, that was kind of their reason for living was her.
Right.
To suddenly say, okay, well, it's fine if you want to go marry this guy. It seemed a little odd. And the fact that she, I mean, I don't want to give away too much here, but at a certain point she finds out that he is not all he says he is, and then she just kind of goes along with
it. Okay. Yeah, right. I mean, especially for an intelligent girl.
Yeah, and I didn't think that part at the end where she turns into an alien is believable at all.
And moves to South Africa. Right.
I want to thank you for joining us for the first part of our Oscar discussion for 2009-2010. You can check back in a few days when we'll have the second part of the discussion up, which includes The Hurt Locker, Inglourious Basterds, Precious, A Serious Man, Up, and Up in the Air. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.